there is massive room for augmentation rather than substitution. So rather than replacing jobs, currently AI is changing them. It has the potential to do an enormous amount of good. It can free workers from monotonous tasks like data entry, filling out paperwork, and people can take on more creative and meaningful tasks. We still think that although many jobs can be augmented by AI, there's very few that are entirely replaceable, and humans are always going to be needed.
Hello everyone, it's Neil Carberry, the Chief Executive of the REC here, and welcome along to another episode of Talking Recruitment, the REC podcast. A delight to have you with us again. The evenings are getting lighter, the clocks have gone forward, spring is springing, and we can hope that as we move into the middle of the year, that maybe we'll see some growth pick up across the market. Real sense from the REC's data that we may be beginning to see a bit of a turn in terms of sentiment, at least, if not yet, in billings data. If you do want to check out that latest billing data, our report on jobs came out on Monday the 8th. That's on the website with all your latest details on permanent and temporary placements, plus candidate availability and salary trends for March in the market. And in terms of measuring activity in terms of job ads, look out on the 12th of April for our latest labour market tracker. In terms of ways of getting involved in your REC, clearly we had a lot of legal changes at the beginning of April, and our regular standards event is on the 25th of the month, going through all of that, but also some of the other pressures we're seeing in the market, particularly around some scams and some things that you need to be aware of as a recruitment business owner to keep your business, your candidates and your clients safe. We like organising events on the 25th of the month, so 25th of April for the standards event, and do join us in London for our first in-person annual conference for 5 years. That's at King's Place on the 25th of June. You can book onto that on the REC website right now. It's going to be a fantastic day. We've got great business leaders. We've got great insight and thought leadership coming on all of the big topics, from AI to competition in the market to how our market will reshape over the next 2 or 3 years. A really essential day to come along to at King's Place on the 25th of June. So do come and join us for that. Of course, we are out and about around the country as well. So we're in the Northwest on the 18th of April, the Southeast on the 16th of May, and Northern Ireland on the 23rd of May. And clearly a lot to do in Northern Ireland at the moment, following the restoration of the Assembly and the Executive, where there's a big backlog of labour market issues for the Executive to deal with, and where the REC is going to be particularly active in the months to come. Now let's turn to our discussion for today, and we're picking up on something you may have heard us mention before at the REC, either in our budget response or in previous podcasts, and that's the flexible AI upskilling pilot that was announced for professional services by the Chancellor of the Exchequer in the recent budget. I'm delighted to say that Miles Beckwith, who's an Assistant Director at the Department for Business and Trade, joins us on today's podcast. Miles, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, Neil. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, and an opportunity for me to say thank you for all the work you do in the team that looks after professional services in government. I don't think members readily see the activity of the Department for Business. They're too busy noses to the grindstone, but certainly the position that professional services has in terms of getting government and ministerial attention more broadly has been supported by you and the team. So I'll say up front, thank you very much for all of your efforts on that.
Cheers, Neil. I really appreciate that. Yeah, it's fair to say that we're not always civil servants in general aren't always the most visible people. So it's really nice to hear that from you.
So I wanted to start by kind of exploring government's view of professional service businesses like recruiters. Why is it that government sees professional services firms as a priority for this kind of initiative? I know we talk regularly through the Professional and Business Services Council with ministers, with yourself and civil servants, about how we support this sector. Why is it so important to the British economy?
So there's two reasons here. The first is that there's generally a background of high demand for skilled labour across the economy, but it's particularly acute in the professional and business services sector, which recruitment falls into. And the second is that professional and business services are particularly exposed to the impacts of AI. And I'll dig into both of those things a little bit further. So in terms of that demand for skilled labour, the skills shortage vacancies rate, which is skills shortage vacancies are when vacancies cannot be filled due to a shortage of the relevant skill. So in terms of that demand for skilled labour, the skills shortage vacancies rate, which is skills shortage vacancies are when vacancies cannot be filled due to a shortage of the relevant skill. Those types of vacancies have increased sharply since 2017 and 2022, from 24% to 36%. And these figures come from the Employer Skills Survey. So this is a massive survey that government carries out. Readily, we have in excess of 70,000 businesses respond to that. And that's a really sharp increase from 2017 to 2022 in the number of skill shortage vacancies. This increase now means that the business services sector has a higher skill shortage vacancy density than the economy-wide average, which again makes it a good target for a skills-based program like this. And in addition to this, we also have the fact that expenditure on training per employee by businesses is falling. So it's down 6% relative to 2017. So you have high demand for skills, and employers report to government via our survey that they're spending less on upskilling their employees. And then all of that is combined with the fact that professional business services, thankfully, is forecast to grow in size. So that stands to potentially amplify existing shortages. Coming to the second point of the question, professional business services are particularly exposed to AI. And when I say exposed, I don't want to set hairs running. Exposure is not equivalent to substitution. It can also be augmentation. So the Future Skills Unit in the Department for Education replicated analysis by Princeton University to assess the exposure of AI of different professions in the UK economy. And of the top 20 occupations exposed to AI applications, such as large language models, there was a real concentration of professional business services firms that was observed. It also showed that professional occupations requiring a degree or equivalent period of work experience were more exposed. So you can see that there's a real need within PBS and recruitment for a scheme like this. So I'm really pleased that government is piloting something like this.
That's fascinating, because I think I'd agree. Look, professional services is a UK success story. One of the things that I always felt back in the days when I was looking at supporting trade missions to places like China for the UK when I worked at the CBI, we always used to say, well, why are the Germans ahead of us on some of these things in China? And the answer was that China's stage of development was very focused on the things which Germany is traditionally stronger than we are at. You know, kind of core manufacturing is a class example, where we've got a great manufacturing sector in Britain, but it is smaller than the German sector, whereas we have always been world leaders in professional services. So it's an important sector, a sector that, yeah, as you say, is experiencing shortages. I have to say, Miles, that the most common discussion I have with recruiters in the REC's membership is, how do I build a better team internally? How do I source the right people with the right skills, and how do I build them? And of course, people are using things like the REC's certificates of practice and so forth to build those core skills around compliance and doing things the right way. But you've also got a big change coming to the industry in terms of tech disruption. And one of the things that I found myself discussing at our recent big trade show, the Recruitment Agency Expo, is, you know, there's two things in recruitment. There's match and fit, And match is about understanding someone's skills as you're placing them, and you can do that in a very automated way. Fit is a bit more complex and involves service and involves the things that humans are really good at, but it's also where kind of we'll want the humans more focused in years to come as they deal with the fit much more using AI tools. So you've already explored this a little bit, but I think this sense that recruitment is open to positive and challenging disruption from AI feels very kind of right to me in terms of what we're seeing. But I think it's really important that we focus on the upside. So where do you see the potential of AI for professional business services sectors like recruitment?
Yeah, and just to pick up on a couple of things that you mentioned there, Neil, it would be remiss of me as an ambassador for these sectors within government to not reiterate your point that PBS, as we call them, the professional business services, are a massive UK success story. They bring in £277 billion of GDP per year. We have the second largest consulting sector in the world behind the US. The same goes for advertising. We've got a phenomenal legal, audit, accounting sector, a phenomenal, of course, recruitment sector.
Third biggest in the world.
There you go. yes, and that's also a big part of what the opportunity is here. The second part, another thing I wanted to pick up on that you mentioned was about that exposure question and what the upsides are. You know, it strikes me, according to a recent report about robotics from the International Robotics Federation, South Korea has the highest proportion of robots per 10,000 workers, which is about 1,000. The European average is about 150 robots per worker, and South Korea has a unemployment rate of around 3%. So automation, the kind of which AI could facilitate, does not necessarily result in higher unemployment. So I think there is a big upside here, which brings me to your question. So what is the potential in this area? For the government at this time, it's all about productivity. So we see there as being a potential increase to UK GDP by up to 10.3% by 2030, which is the equivalent of an additional £232 billion. There's also research out there that suggests that a 1 percentage point increase in training is associated with about a 0.6% increase in productivity and a 0.3% increase in hourly wages. So focusing on AI, focusing on training, which this fund will do, we see as standing to potentially have massive productivity and GDP gains for the UK. We also think, and coming back to your earlier question about the power of this in the recruitment sector, is that there's massive headroom here for adoption. So there was recently a study in which 4 out of 5 responding professional services firms said AI could help their business operations and improve their productivity. However, only 4% were actively using it. So that leaves us with 96% of businesses to reach. And that's what this fund is intended to do. We also think that there is massive room for augmentation rather than substitution. So rather than replacing jobs, currently AI is changing them. It has the potential to do an enormous amount of good. It can free workers from monotonous tasks like data entry, filling out paperwork, and people can take on more creative and meaningful tasks. So we still think that although many jobs can be augmented by AI, there's very few that are entirely replaceable, and humans are always going to be needed to apply their judgment, their empathy, and their creativity to AI tools.
That point about this isn't a question of the end of work, and I think sometimes some of the more polemic writers from places like the Valley are given to these kind of predictions, but more a faster and more robust version of what we've seen with every new technology, which is a big adaptation challenge, both in terms of companies exploiting the the headroom, but also helping the workforce step into where the jobs are now. That feels to me to be absolutely relevant. And you've set out a lot of the logic of why government's thinking about this and thinking about it for professional and business services, particularly already in the in this discussion. I think that the listeners won't be surprised to hear, because I've said it every so often on this podcast, the route to success in recruitment and staffing in the next 20 to 30 years in the UK is to understand we will have a tight labour market where recruitment businesses will need to be deep specialists, true consultant partners with clients, and selling on value, not price, which I think is super important. The REC's new AIM Hire Guide is all about talking to clients about why that's in their interest too. But the skill set needed for that is one that exploits all of the available technology to do, as friend of the REC, former recruiter Rob McCargo, who's now at PwC looking at all things AI, would say that you kind of understand that the robots are not here to take your jobs. They're here to do the boring bits or the repetitive bits. And actually, there's a real human service that we have to get to. So we kind of understand the reason for action here. We can see that there's a need for businesses to lean into training in this area, lean into redeveloping their business models, and that it's obvious that you've identified the GDP gain, Miles, which of course a portion of which is tax take, and we all know that higher productivity would support the tax take and therefore help with the fiscal position, fund public services, and meet the Chancellor's goals on tax rates. So we can see the kind of macro picture about why this is interesting. Let's bring it down to a bit more micro. Why now? And tell us a little bit about the scheme that the Chancellor announced in the budget.
Why now? So in addition to all those factors coming together, you know, I've been working in this space on this team for 3.5 years now, and you've been there throughout, Neil. You know me, you've known me since I started, and in that time I've even grown a beard. But one thing I haven't
grown... And it is an excellent beard.
Well, thank you, Neil. One thing I haven't grown is disenchanted. And if there are any Alan Partridge writers listening, I'm free to consult. And in that time that I've been working, you know, we've had roundtables with the relevant PBS ministers on productivity, on skills. It's come up at Professional and Business Services Council meetings and in the working groups. So this is really something that we've had a lot of discussion about. And I'm really glad that colleagues in DBT, myself, have been able to speak to Department of Science, Innovation and Technology colleagues and get them to recognise the importance of this. And I'm really glad that they've chosen PBS as a testbed for this kind of idea. And I really hope that the pilot's successful so that it can expand and benefit even more of the economy. So in terms of why the Chancellor's announced it, I think it's building on all those factors that we mentioned earlier. It's building on all the work of civil servants over a period of years to stress the importance of skills and the opportunities of AI. In terms of what it is an initial pilot. It's only available to SMEs in the professional and business services sector, which is why I take a particular shine to it, because these are people that I've been working with for years and years. There's going to be £6.4 million of grant funding available. The funding that they receive will be match funding to procure a wide variety of AI skills training as suits business needs. And the scheme really aims to fund training which supports employees to develop their technical skills or understanding of AI to be able to develop, deploy or use AI in their role.
That's really clear and I think really timely. And, you know, I'm fond of saying that the REC's membership is a fat bottom pyramid, but essentially what I mean by that is that there are maybe 30 large household names at the top in our membership and about 1,200 businesses in our bottom tier of membership in terms of size, those SMEs who, for whom this kind of scheme will be particularly helpful. So I'd imagine that listeners in the SMEs field now thinking, okay, well, here's a potential thing for me to think about. How could they learn more and get involved in this scheme and begin to walk along a path that will help make them more competitive, more effective in the 5 to 10 years to come?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Neil. So in terms of learning more, I tend to just walk around London shouting about it to anyone who will listen. So you might just hear it out and about in Westminster. You can also go to gov.uk, and we have a link that people can register their expressions of interest on or via. And I'm keen to encourage listeners to do that, because in receiving expressions of interest ahead of the launch of the scheme, which will be in May, we'll actually be able to use expressions of interest to help tailor the scheme and make sure that it's providing funding for the right kind of things. We are hosting an information event on the 6th of April via Eventbrite. So please do go to the relevant page and sign up to that. You can also read about this in our PBS bulletin. So if you're not signed up, my team runs a bulletin we publish every week. We try and summarize the most important macro level news that affects the PBS sector, and we're keeping a close tab on this. And you can also engage with the department or myself about this or any other issue directly. So I'm happy to share my email. It's my job to be there for the recruitment sector, the PBS sector more widely, and it's not limited to this issue. So I really do have an open door, and I'll always do, and my team will always do everything we can to resolve queries, even if it is just knitting together people from different departments, making introductions, providing information. That's what we're here for. So don't hesitate to reach out about any of this.
And of course, with all of this, the REC is always ready to help direct members towards the right place when they're thinking about an issue like this. Feels to me like this sits hand in hand with some work that the REC is doing at the moment about more efficient right to work checks as areas where government and business can really work together to improve performance in the sector in a way that is good for government, good for candidates, good for clients, and good for the sector itself. And I think the good thing about where we are now with projects like this is that they are practical and clear in their goals. And I think we're really delighted to be able to support the department with it. Miles, thanks for your time today.
No, and thank you, Neil, not just for this opportunity to amplify this message, but also all your help over all the years. You've been there facilitating research that the team has done on skills needs. You're a great supporter in the PBSC working groups. And maybe, I don't know if you get, if many people toot Rex Horn to your members, but you have been a really valuable partner. So thank you.
And I'd just like to point out to members who are listening that I have not paid Miles to say that, but it's hugely appreciated. Look, I'm really glad you've had time to join us, Miles, and I'm really excited actually by this pilot. I think it's a real opportunity for recruiters to put their best foot forward and start competing in a new world using new tools. And I mentioned earlier, I was at our big trade show a couple of weeks ago at Excel, the Recruitment Agency Expo, and what always struck me is, you know, it's not been a great year in recruitment. We had a very really strong 21 and 22. 23 into early 24 has been a bit weaker. It's starting to turn now, but the vibrancy and entrepreneurialism that I saw there was really, really heartening. And I think grabbing hold of tools like this will really help us to sustain that kind of growth focus that I know a lot of recruiters have. Miles, thanks again.
Thanks very much, Neil. Take care.
And thank you to all of you for joining us on this episode of Talking Recruitment, the REC podcast. If you've enjoyed this episode and you'd like to dig in further, why not have a look at our Aim Higher guide, which I mentioned earlier. There's an episode for the podcast on that. It's episode 30 with Maxine Bly. Or if you'd like to dig into a different form of empowering change, my colleague Kate Shoesmith talks to Dan Robertson about EDI in recruitment and unveiling workplace activism and making change in episode 29. Or if you just want to know about holiday pay changes, the woman in the know is always Lorraine Laurie, our Chief Standards Officer, and she's on episode 31, looking at all the latest legal changes. So some further listening for you there. If we haven't quite given you your fill of podcast action for this round of listening, but delighted you've been able to join us on this episode. Thank you again to Miles, and thank you to all of you for joining us on this episode of Talking Recruitment, the REC podcast. Thank you for listening today. I hope you took away some valuable thoughts from this discussion. If you'd like to hear more, head to rec.uk.com/talking recruitment or follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Simply search Talking Recruitment to find us. Thank you.